Welcome to Zero Knowledge. I'm your host, Anna Rose. In this podcast, we will be exploring the latest in zero knowledge research and the decentralized web, as well as new paradigms that promise to change the way we interact and transact online. So, welcome back. As some of you may have noticed, there was no episode last week. This is the first episode of 2021, and actually that week off was the first break I took since this podcast started 3 years ago. And it was pretty good, to be honest. Now, you may have also noticed that the intro is a little bit different. And for anyone who missed the end-of-year podcast that we released 2 weeks ago, there's been a pretty big change here at the Zero Knowledge Podcast. So Frederick, my long-standing co-host and the other voice you are very used to hearing on the show, will sadly no longer be joining me on the show every week. In the end-of-year episode, Frederick actually shared why he felt he wanted to leave the show. And so if you want to hear more about that, in his own words, you should listen to that episode. I'll add the link in the show notes, or you can just look at the episode that came before this one. It's been a great run, and I'm super proud of the work we did. And it's sad to see him go. But like all change, this also offers up an opportunity to rethink the podcast and maybe take it in a new direction. So during my time off, I was able to spend time reading and learning about new ideas and get inspired. And I feel I've come back more inspired for sure than I felt at the end of 2020. So I think this coming year should actually be an exceptional one. And it's clear that the work we are doing in the field of zero knowledge and decentralized tech is more relevant and valuable than ever. Enjoy this first episode of the year. My guests are Tarun Sheetra, James Prestwich, and Josh Cincinnati. We chat about where we are at in the field of zero knowledge applications, blockchain, privacy, and DeFi. And we also try to imagine where this could be going in the near future. So hope you enjoy it. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe. Maybe tell a friend who you think might get something out of this. Yeah, so here's my conversation with Tarun, James, and Josh. So today I will be doing a catch-up with some friends you may be familiar with if you are a regular listener to this show. Tarun, James, and Josh are here to kick off the new year and set 2021 on its course. So you have all been on, but let's do a quick round of intros so that people know who's talking and what you're all about.
Sure. It's nice to be back on the podcast. My name is James Prestwich. I'm currently a protocol engineer at Celo. We work on the Celo blockchain, which is a proof of stake chain with a EVM.
So I'm Josh Cincinnati. I was previously the executive director of the Zcash Foundation, and prior to that, I was the developer advocate at BlockCypher, a Bitcoin and Ethereum API company. And now I am what I like to call gainfully unemployed, and I'm just doing a bit of advising and some fun stuff on the side, and I've just had my ear to the ground with all things cryptocurrency for quite a while.
Also the co-host of the acclaimed Twadcast, Josh's Dumb Voice is what it's
perhaps
called.
The only one of its kind. I don't know that there are other Twadcasts. Yes. But yeah, this is new for me because I'm used to the 2 minute format constraint, but well, I'll do my best.
Hopefully there'll be some bangers. Okay. Now, Tarun, you have already guest hosted quite often, so people should be pretty familiar with you, but maybe you want to just say a little hello.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Tarun. I am a founder of a company called Gauntlet. We kind of assess economic attacks and economic security in proof of stake protocols and also in DeFi protocols. And I also do a little investing on the side with Robot Ventures.
Nice. So it's funny. I think Tarun, James, Frederick, and I did do one of these kind of more catch-up-y episodes. Do you remember? This was like Stanford Blockchain mm-hmm. Conference right before it all went down. Man.
But do you guys remember how amazing it was that everyone who was there from Asia was just like, WTF, Americans, what are you doing? And like everyone at the conference was like, huh?
Yep. Man, I was just thinking about that, though. That was sort of the last time I did an episode like this, which was more just kind of casual and catching up with folks. And I think, what were we talking about back then? It was the flash loans or something. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Remember flash loans?
I do.
Well, I feel like they're still kind of happening.
They do happen. Yeah, they're huge.
They're like a regular part of the ecosystem now.
They've just become normal.
They sometimes are used in attacks.
We've seen flash loans really catch on. They're pretty much standard attack vectors now. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen flash minting yet. There's a proposal to put it in WETH version 10, but we'll see if that happens.
What would that mean? What's flash minting?
It means that you can not just borrow tokens that exist, but create tokens that don't exist, as long as you burn them again before the end of the transaction.
But of a certain type of token, like an existing token?
Yeah, yeah. As long as the token contract supports it. So okay. The idea of putting flash minting in WETH is that you could have an infinite amount, for all intents and purposes, of WETH for one transaction.
Is that a good?
Also, Maker actually tried to add this, and for MKR, and it did not succeed.
I missed that.
Wait, it did not succeed in being implemented because of the governance?
It did not succeed in passing governance.
Okay. It's not that it failed on the ground.
No, the code is out there. Code is out there. It's in the repo.
Yeah. Someone should, if only they could have minted an infinite number of governance tokens.
There you go.
For that one transaction of voting.
Well, that actually also happened, by the way. MKR has a slight aside, has a continuous voting mechanism. So, like, imagine if you put up a proposal that says, hey, make Anna like Queen of Berlin.
Who says I'm not already?
And basically, people vote on that, and anytime the percentage of the vote flips from like below 50 to above 50, then the answer, let's say it's like 52% no initially, and then it flips to like 45% no, then all of a sudden you will be anointed queen. But if people remove their votes to that proposal and it falls back down, you lose your queen's S. So it's like, it's kind of continuous voting.
In order so that like a flash wouldn't work, like you'd have to keep it up somehow. Although
there was a bug that like actually someone found a way to do a flash thing.
That's so sustained somehow.
At the very last minute.
Okay.
Yeah, basically they like front run someone and did a flash.
Oh, at the very last minute to get the vote in. Because then you're like, even though it's been going over, it's not like an average of that time. It's just like whatever it ends up on. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they changed that to have. But anyway, sorry. Maybe that's a little bit of a side.
Oh, this is actually exactly the kind of stuff I want to talk about today. There is a little bit of a schedule that, you know, I put together of kind of a few topics that we can talk about. But this is kind of the purpose of this episode. It's a bit of a checking in where we're at, maybe talking about some of the things we expect to see. I don't want to do a big prediction for the year, but maybe like this quarter and get some general thoughts about what's up. And also, given that it's a Zero Knowledge podcast, given that there's this changed format, one of my goals is also to start talking about potential topics or ideas that are exciting, things that we could even cover in future episodes in depth. So first is a quick rundown of where we are at. We are currently recording on, what is it, January 9th. What is going on right now?
It's pretty boring. Not much. I mean, nowhere, nothing interesting. Oh, well, I mean, I guess other than the botched coup in America and crypto assets exceeding $1 trillion, but that's yeah, it is sort of nuts though. I mean, it seems like there's we seem to be at the beginning of, at least from a, you know, pure interest and speculation perspective, it seems like we're in the beginning of another 2017 style run, which may be good or bad, depending on your perspective.
You just said beginning of. Really?
When Bitcoin in 2016, 2017 eclipsed its previous all-time high, it went on to just about 10x after that. So, you know, if it follows a similar pattern, there's still a 10x in the future. That seems pretty crazy to me. I don't think that's actually likely to happen.
Yeah, I would agree. And I guess by beginning of bull run, I don't know that it's going to match that same, like, that same cycle. I mean, I don't know anything about price, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm just just purely based off of the kind of sentiment and interest that you see from people in and outside of our little niche industry. And in that regard, it does feel like we're still somewhat early in this stage. And I don't know if that means, and I agree with James. I think it's very unlikely that Bitcoin's going to breach that insane amount of money this time around. My big interest and focus, I think, for the next quarter is going to be really about what the, and this is, again, obviously like a US bias from my perspective, but seeing that new proposed rule by FinCEN and the incoming administration and how they might approach, you know, cryptocurrency regulation differently is going to be something to watch very closely for the next couple of months.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something so far that I haven't covered much on the podcast, but I'm curious about that a little bit myself. I want to understand a bit more where things are at, because I think the last time I really did any in-depth look at that was in 2018 or something. It was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
We've just been sort of, you know, rolling along kind of under the radar. And now all of a sudden,
I like that.
Yeah, me
I
too. I think there is this feeling. I was talking to you, Tarun, the other day, and it was like the bear market was kind of nice. It was like this little crew, and we'd see each other at conferences, and there was nobody. We didn't have the random like acquaintance pinging us about, what do you think about, should I buy some Bitcoin now, or should I, like, that's a tricky question. Well, whenever I get it, I'm just like, I'm always like, no. It's too high.
you know how to stop those, right?
What?
Don't have any friends outside of crypto.
Oh,
that's my approach.
God.
I mean, the best part is the relative ones, which are like, hey, can we talk and you tell me how I should invest my crypto asset portfolio? I'm like, no. or I tell them random shit coins that are guaranteed to go down.
No.
I'm like, these are definitely going to go down. So you should definitely.
Yeah, but most of those are going to go up first.
Yes, but you know, don't tell people about reality. Tell people about the dream.
Other than, so I think to define this moment is a little bit like, we're in a moment. It feel, you know, there's a change this month than it was 3 months ago. Even with the DeFi kind of excitement, this is definitely like in a different space. I think another interesting thing that's happening right now, though, is there's a lot of projects that, I've mentioned this a few times on the podcast, but a lot of the projects that raised in 2017 came out in the last quarter, in like Q4. And now going into Q1 of 2021, you have like, because some of them launched, but they didn't fully launch. Like Polkadot launched, but it didn't launch Parachains. And Cosmos launched. Actually, it launched a little bit before, but you know, IBC hasn't launched fully yet. So this is where I'm very curious. Like, are there any things that you know are going to actually happen this quarter that are something for us to pay attention to in blockchain and crypto and zero knowledge?
Something that I think will be interesting to look at, and you know, full disclosure, I advise these folks a little bit, but I think that it's very likely that the MENA mainnet is going to launch. And that, I think, will be a very interesting test of, it's going to be an interesting test for a number of reasons, but the biggest one, I think, is really like the approach of using, you know, their approach to recursive zero knowledge proofs to enable, you know, a more scalable blockchain of sorts. And I think there, you know, that kind of is going to echo throughout a lot of different projects, whether you're talking about like Rollups as L2 or the stuff that's happening with Halo on the Zcash side. Like you're gonna see more people approaching it. It's cool to see, but there's also like these, I don't think it's the case that a lot of like the L2 approaches are premature optimization, right? Like it's clear that that's sort of desperately needed in various places. But there is a question of like whether, you know, these sort of base layer scalability things for base layers that don't have as much usage or are brand new, whether that is a premature optimization to start.
Mm. What about you, Tarun? What's on your horizon for the quarter?
The interesting thing that I've been thinking about, at least, and this goes to Josh's point regarding like privacy, you know, kind of, we saw all this growth in spite of the fact that we have piss poor privacy right now, which is like, what is the ImageNet moment for crypto? So if we look back like 10 years ago, the thing that caused kind of the boom in like AI stuff and facial recognition and eventually the surveillance capitalism stuff in general was ImageNet, which is like 2010, actually, when people realized that like you could throw more hardware at neural nets and like actually classify people's cat versus their dog poop. And so, you know, like basically like ImageNet set off this huge kind of boom. And that boom came from the fact that people actually like saw how this could be useful in practice. And like it set off this thing about like making good developer tools, making like good UX, like hiding things from like you. It's shitty for privacy, but good UX is like Alexa. You know, anyone can use Alexa and they have to think about it, but it's actually doing all this stuff behind the scenes. So I kind of feel like the ImageNet moment has got to be some combination of privacy plus, you know, I'll call it DeFi in the sense of like it needs to have more operations than just transfer. Like it needs to have some notion of trading. It needs to have some notion of borrowing. Hopefully this boom will like actually push us across the finish line on that and we'll have that moment.
Do you think, are there any projects that you've noticed like kind of happening right now that are doing that? Or is this something that you foresee for like the year, like a goal almost?
I think I've noticed a lot of zero knowledge researchers start looking into actual DeFi applications that are private, mm-hmm. which I think like is, to me, that's like the holy grail. Barry has been on a bunch of forums, like writing about like, how do I make a zero, like, some like approximation to a zero knowledge version of Uniswap. There are a lot of reasons you can't directly, but I've just like noticed there's the ZK folks who like sort of, we had the last wave funded a lot of the ZK innovation and we're kind of getting to like some of that in production. And, you know, James can of course talk about some of the, that stuff actually. But I have noticed like a bunch of people starting to look more into DeFi. And I think like that is the moment we kind of have this like switch that really makes it useful. So I don't have a particular project. Like it's some combination of like Aleo, Aztec, maybe Starkware. I don't know. Yeah. Starkware is doing too many things. It's like really hard to say.
Do you think Barry's post in a way was seen as a challenge to some of the ZK folks? Because it was pretty much saying you can't do it, right? Like it's DeFi and privacy don't mesh in a way, at least in this particular example. And I know of at least two projects that are trying to do something in that direction using zero knowledge proofs and privacy.
Yeah, I think it just says you can't do something as simple.
Yeah.
It doesn't say you can't do it at all. It just says that like something that is really gas efficient, which is the real reason Uniswap is good, is like it's just like simple compared to like a real exchange.
Yeah.
Is hard. But I don't think there's like a impossibility theorem. But to me, I think that's the thing I think there's an ImageNet moment for. And so I don't have any particular projects. You know, I can tell you all the DeFi projects because I think they're doing a ton of new stuff, but they're not going to be the thing I think that actually crosses the chasm. I think like you actually do need private versions of these for it to be like useful.
To kind of Tarun's point, there's no impossibility theorem for all of this stuff, but we can make it for like a bunch of specific applications. Like if you're trying to trade, you can't keep the current market price private because no one will trade if they don't know what the market price is. There have to be like some kind of bounds on that. There has to be some way you can query and know what trade you're going to be making before dispatching your trade. So there's a lot of these like additional constraints on any DeFi application with privacy. There's a bunch of things you can't do and a bunch of things that get much harder. But there's no reason to believe that it's all impossible.
Well, I was just wondering, because like I think there is this motivation. There's clearly like a motivated interest, I think, from people like us that see a need for that kind of privacy embedded in DeFi applications. Because like, I don't know that if it's just a bunch of like very nerdy people who want it. I mean, the main example I have here from my own experience is just how hard it was to get people to use the super efficient Zcash, you know, privacy features. There wasn't as much priority in the Zcash ecosystem to push people to shielded adoption as I think that there, you know, should have been. And I mean, there are other things at play there, but I can kind of, I could imagine something similar happening when you have like Uniswap that's super gas efficient, and then you might have some other cool dex
private
that
one.
Manages to, yeah, private one, but it's like, oh, it's going to cost 10x gas to do it. Am I going to really, does it matter to me? You know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I can see like very large, you know, very on-chain hedge fund types wanting that privacy, but I don't know that it's going to trickle down to average users if it winds up costing more. But anyway, that all of which to say, I'm just sort of curious, like, do you think that there will be a push from protocol developers to figure out ways to encourage that to be the default? Is there going to be like a UX narrative push to try and get people behind it, or something else?
Or maybe something from the actual, like from the business side, yeah, that like actually forces it?
I think it's a really interesting question, because one of the outcomes we've seen from like all of this DeFi summer and yield farming craze is that the blockchain itself does not really trickle down to the average user. With even a moderate amount of usage, like we're seeing, the gas prices are too high for normal people to take advantage of all of this yield farming and the returns. Mm. And this fact is what kind of drove the development of YFI and Harvest and all of these kind of vault things that batch hundreds or thousands of users into single fee payments. But you can't do that effectively with privacy. There's no like good design for a private YFI vault yet.
And is there a demand for it? It's kind of the question.
If people can make money using it. One of the huge drivers for privacy in traditional markets is making money, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, I agree. I think that when you're saying kind of like from the business side, I think these protocols need to somehow have a much more concrete incentive to people producing privacy and spending resources on generating proofs or generating like contributing like hardware to doing that. And I think right now, if you look at most designs in privacy preserving networks, there's not really something that truly actually like rewards the people who actually have to spend the extra resources. And so in some sense, if you actually were able to somehow implicitly or explicitly tax the whales to pay for privacy for the knaves, and then somehow like promise the whales future inflation or something, like some, like, I have an answer,
wow,
but there has to be some way of like forcing kind of like, hey, look, you whales, you can like collect inflation, but you can only collect it if you somehow are, to use James's favorite phrase, if you're somehow providing privacy for the rubes.
When have you said that, James?
Oh, I've been using the word rubes a lot lately.
What is a rube? I don't know this word.
This is an old, like, used to mean redneck down where I come from in the South.
Okay.
But these days, it means like the target of a scam, some naive person that you're going to go take money from. And, you know, just like in 2017, I think a huge amount of the market, this cycle is driven by taking money from rubes.
Hmm. A word that I want to bring back, and I actually have been using it all week, is calling someone a Yahoo. I don't know if you know it used to mean something other than a search engine.
Yeah, actually, I don't know. What was the meaning
of
Yahoo?
So it means noisy, rude, or, well, yeah, something, like it's an obnoxious person. See, it's a group of Yahoos. I feel like old men used that term like in the 80s or something. But then they turned it into a search engine and we lost it to, you know, to the world. Another thing that is, and I'm curious, one of you might know a bit more about what's going on with that, but like last year, like Libra was like on the radar of everyone. Like, it's going to happen. Oh no. Oh,
Diem.
Yay.
Libra, yeah. Now Diem.
Okay. So Libra is no longer
Libra. No longer our best friend.
Libra is Diem. What's up with the project? Is it happening this year? Does anyone know?
Probably not.
Seems unlikely.
I would say the attrition personnel-wise seems to be high. That would be the main thing I would point out.
All right. Yeah. There was also a project that it was actually one of the first projects that we ever did a deep technical dive on, and that was Definity 3 years ago. Ooh. What's going on with Definity?
They launched this week.
Mainnet. Really? Oh!
They put scare quotes around the word mainnet in their own blog title.
In the ZK context, the zero knowledge roll-up rollouts like have been happening. Is there anything coming up?
Zcash just pre-announced the announcement of their new proving system.
Okay. This is the one based on Halo.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is, in terms of the roll-up world, though, I know like Hermes should be... I mean, I know that there's a trusted setup going on, I think, for them as well right now that I want to potentially participate in. And that would be another L2 ZK roll-up coming online. Soonish. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think, are there any other projects like on the L2 ZK side that we think that are like coming? I'm kind of thinking of some of the previous guests and stuff.
There's going to be a major upgrade to ZK Sync at some point, but I'm not sure if it's scheduled yet.
Okay.
You mean the addition of their token?
I'm sure that's going to happen. But they're looking to add some like scripting or smart contract functionality.
Yeah, I am actually pretty excited though about ZK Sync.
About the token?
No, the code. I mean, the token. I don't really understand why. Like, at the end of the day, this goes back to the thing I was saying earlier. It was like if you could somehow make the whales subsidize privacy, then like that's like the ideal privacy token. But I have yet to see anything that looks like that.
Hmm.
What do you think of the Tornado Cash token?
I guess mixers are a little bit like that in the sense that like the whales are contributing, at least if they're contributing the most liquidity. Hmm. Mixers make a little more sense for this than ZK stuff right now. Hmm. Although there is this weird thing with. Like for instance, like NIM has a token for their mixer, but there's something weird about it because if the distribution of the token gets really concentrated, you can identify who the main mixers are.
Oh my gosh, true.
NIM is the mixnet one, right?
Yeah, which is like really, there's like some trade-off, like someone actually does have to quantify this trade-off of like, if it's too concentrated, you actually can never really have too much privacy. And this gets to what Josh is talking about. Like, there's some trade-off surface, but I do really think that somehow you got to get the whales to subsidize privacy for the rubes. But
that idea that, like, by participating a lot in the network and then being rewarded after the fact with these governance tokens, kind of the model that was popularized by Uniswap, that potentially that would actually undermine a private system because then somehow the identity of the most active users would be revealed by the balances in the wallets. Unless those two were done in private setting, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think the UX is also annoying because you would basically be forcing the users to constantly be splitting their assets if you're going to try to like make it look like it's not concentrated. But then they're paying fees for that.
Yeah. A question to all of you, and this is another kind of topic for this is a little bit thinking more about this podcast, and actually any listeners who have additional ideas, please do get in touch about this, but it's ideas that you personally want to explore this year, things that are exciting to you.
Well, I mentioned this earlier, I'm really interested in all of the kind of user and fee batching and pooling that's going on recently. So a lot of these like DeFi projects are pooling users and splitting up the pool to get the highest return for everybody. I think that kind of model can have a bunch of applications. So maybe trying to hit the lowest interest rate on borrowing for a large pool of users, or, you know, kind of other things in that area. This way that we're saying, okay, the layer one is not scaling, it doesn't serve all users' needs, so we're providing a way to batch users and fill all of their needs together. And that's more efficient for everyone.
Yeah, and I guess examples, like, would you put ZK rollups in that category, or would you think more on the, like, DeFi yearn kind of?
You know, I've been thinking more about the DeFi yearn harvest kind of thing, but You know, rollups also fit that bill, is you're letting users opt into this other system with different trust assumptions in order to get group benefits. Rollups also do this nice thing where they allow people who aren't part of that system to avoid paying for it.
What about you, Tarun? What's in your mind? What are the ideas that you want to explore?
Well, I guess I as they would say, alpha leaked my top thing I wrote in my little notes, which was, how do you finance privacy?
Mm-hmm. Alpha leaked it earlier in the show.
Yeah.
It's not a big wide alpha there, is there?
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, kind of a related question to what James is thinking about, it's something that I started thinking about, like, around SBC with some people I met at Stanford. And then, of course, the world blew up, and then, like, somehow it got lost in March. And, like, I don't know if it's coming back, but it's kind of like pre-Yearn, there was this idea of, like, okay, if layer twos that are optimistic or, like, not ZK force validators to place collateral, and then they're validating many people's transactions, they're effectively doing the same batching thing, right? Like, everyone who's using the layer two, all their transactions are getting approved by the layer one in a batch, like on every little, like, infrequent write to the main chain, whether it's during a challenge or whether or not, right? There's some way you can view that, like, validator main chain interaction as batching all the layer two users. And so the question was, like, what does the transaction fee market look like if you say, like, X percent of transactions are layer two and you vary X from 0 to 100, like, at some point when it's all layer twos, it's like the competition is quite different versus, like, it all being individual users. And so that was, like, kind of something I was thinking a lot about, because the zero knowledge proof generation market is quite different. And I couldn't exactly put my, like, we couldn't put our finger on exactly why, but there's some, like, quantitative difference between batching many layer twos competing for block space versus, like, ZKP rollups.
But it is an L2. Like, wouldn't it also need to be batched in what you described? Like, it's just one of what is batched, no?
It is, but the security model is weird. Like, theoretically, it really doesn't even need a token. It, like, could just be someone relaying a single ZKP for, like, a sequence of state updates versus, like, optimistic style stuff. You actually have to lock up collateral, almost in the same way that when you deposit to Yearn, you've given them your collateral.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's, like, less of this, like, finance game and more of, like, a, like, timing game. And so, like, somehow quantifying that spectrum, and that includes these Yearn type of things. There's kind of this, like, you know, simplex triangle of, like, these three things. And I don't know exactly how you describe them, but there's probably some way to describe all three of them, and each of them are limits of, like, that. So anyway, I was thinking a little about that in March, but then kind of got wrecked, and so maybe now I'll think about it again.
In a sense, like, in that framing, it would make a lot of the L2 collateral lockups competing with the staking lockups for L1 in those systems, which would, is that sort of what you're alluding to, Tarun, that there would be this, like, new unknown, currently unknown equilibria between those economic actors, or is it something else?
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's that plus, if you add in something like a Yearn, then it's like, I have the same capital that's theoretically fungible over all three. How do I allocate to it?
There's a bunch of, like, really non-obvious engineering details around this too that are going to come into play. So, like, for an example, a ZK rollup that can't pay for layer one gas just stops making new blocks. An optimistic rollup that can't pay for layer one gas probably gets everything stolen after a while. And, you know, a kind of Yearn or vault-like thing that can't pay for gas, the funds are tied up and getting a suboptimal rate.
I mean, also, actually, if they're levered, there's potentially losses.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
If they're levered, there's huge losses, potentially.
Right.
This is a topic. Is there any project or anyone that you think is actually working on this right now? Like, have
Well, I mean, I did say it was something I was thinking
about. No, true. I'm wondering, there's no project, right? You don't know of anyone who's actually doing anything like this, do you?
I think we have to see a couple more of these things come online. I think DeFi data actually is the best data set for trying to predict this stuff. Because, you know, we had Yearn and it grew, and then there was like a million copypasta clones. And the layer two wars are probably going to look kind of similar. Wow. It's just that because there's so much engineering effort, we don't think of off-chain labs as a copy pasta version of Optimism. But to validators, to miners, economically, they're just, you know,
wow,
auction bidders who are all competing with each other. And so, like, it's this Harvest versus Yearn versus like Rari versus like, I mean, there's like 500 of these things. They're not even named after food anymore, so it's hard to just call them food coins.
I know, it's terrible. Go back to food.
Yeah. Food was easier. Yeah. I could just say...
They ran out of food emojis, didn't they? That's... I don't understand that realm nearly as... Or not even in the same magnitude the way that Tyrone, you and James do. But it does, like... the way that you start to describe it, my head just immediately starts... wandering into, oh God, this is an overly complex system where no one has full visibility into what's going on, and there is going to be some catastrophic tail event at some point. And I just, that's just what winds up, it's just like big, you know, red alarm bells without any real, like, I can't back that up, you know, beyond just gut feeling, but that's what it feels like, right?
Are we going to see the rise of systemically important food coins?
I will say another thing you're seeing a lot of is insurance funds in DeFi protocols. And I think layer twos, okay, this is a crazy prediction because all the layer twos are very like, they're all fighting with each other, like psyops wise for mindshare. But I think they're going to actually have to pull together an insurance fund. Like for the reasons James is mentioning, they're basically like, they're going to realize it's cheaper for them to socialize an insurance fund over multiple layer twos for potentially losing block space versus like trying to always compete against each other.
Wow. Yeah. How many insurance funds are there? I am only aware of like one, I think, but are there quite a few now?
So each DeFi protocol that has leverage right now basically has one. So yeah. Aave and Synthetics have it explicitly.
Like internally, they have their own... Or do they outsource that? Like, is it within their protocol?
It's in the protocol.
When you say insurance fund, you mean like a pool of funds for in insurance?
Yeah.
Okay. Not like an external insurance. Okay.
The same way that there's the SAFU fund or whatever,
or like the BitMEX insurance.
Yeah,
fund.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Like an on-chain visible insurance fund. So to Josh's point, there is a little more transparency to these insurance events versus like financial crisis where I think like one kind of benefit of the current technology is in the financial crisis, all these homes were underwater in like 2005 or 2006. But like it takes forever for like the mortgage payment person to like not collect, like maybe they didn't collect for 6 months and then they have to go tell the person above them. And there's this whole bureaucracy that made it not clear. Whereas in DeFi, if everything collapses, it's like, it collapses in like five transactions, right? It's like, so at least
it's awesome. Yeah,
the market gets the information faster rather than like having these kind of like actors who are kind of taking forever to figure out whether they want to tell the world everything's blowing up or not.
Yeah, the root of that problem is all of this hidden information in the bureaucracy. Is you have the mortgage, which has been sold to someone else, and some, you know, a third party is collecting the payments, and it takes time for information to like become public through that process. Whereas if it's happening on chain, it is immediately public exactly when you miss your payment. All we need is people watching for that information. They have access to it, whereas previously they didn't.
Mm. On purpose. Yeah. It was like purposefully obfuscated.
It was obfuscated so that they could create these incredibly profitable instruments.
Yeah. I wanted to share one of the new ideas that I want to explore, which was, this is something I actually will hopefully find a way to explore on this podcast, but it's the ZK game episode I found just really fun to do. And that project I find super fun. And this is moving a little bit, maybe even away from blockchain necessarily, but it's this idea of zero knowledge procedural generation and the fog of war, and that the connection between those things and where zero knowledge proofs could potentially actually lead to a decentralized gaming experience without no need for a central server and yet a kind of a trusted truth. And maybe you do need a blockchain in there, but I'm not sure. Like, I think the most exciting part here is that idea that the zero knowledge could provide the privacy to the fog of war, but having like truth be underneath it and shared truth among different participants. So that's just a topic that I am curious about and want to explore. I don't know if you have any ideas for people who I should invite on. I mean, I think the folks that did ZK Game are awesome, but I would love to see more people doing zero knowledge proof or to be playing with zero knowledge proofs in games. So I was thinking even of like inviting some game expert and seeing if I could convince them to use it, or like getting some ZK expert and a game person together so that they can like start to brainstorm that. That was one of my to-dos this year and things that I'm thinking about. Another one that I'm thinking about exploring further is the Flashbots and MEV stuff.
Oh, I was going to bring this up.
Perfect.
One of the things I'm kind of excited about is accelerationism like that. You know, the goal of Flashbots is to kind of accelerate this MEV system so that we don't build up a huge DeFi infrastructure assuming miners are your friends, so that we start designing much earlier for the adversarial world that we will eventually end up with. You know, this kind of ties back to what we were talking about earlier about this equilibrium developing between on-chain vaults, ZK rollups, optimistic rollups, and other end-state chain users. Is we should probably be trying as much as possible to accelerate these things, get there faster so that it is less of a shock when it happens.
When you find out about it.
Yeah.
Because it had been happening for a while, right? But like it was just more recently where it was discovered how bad it was.
Well, I think the thing that brought it to most people's attention was the Phil Dayan's paper from, I want to say it's like...
Yeah, it's actually 2017.
2018?
Or yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's been so long.
Flash Boys was the
Flash
paper.
Flash Boys 2.0.
Yeah.
We're old, James. It's okay. We're just get used to it.
Yep.
We're ancient.
It's really great to kind of see a concrete accelerationist project for that. And the work like Georgios has been doing on MEV Geth is really interesting.
I think the only thing I would add to that is there's a fallacy that I think other chains may run into, which is that they may try to over optimize for this before they have usage. And I actually think you should be accelerationist, like assume it's going to happen, but you shouldn't do it cart before the horse style before you have any transactions, because you're just going to make the UX terrible for your end users. Mm-hmm.
is the Flashbots, I haven't talked with them, so I don't know what the exact project is, but is that like a research project, or is that like designing new L1s to not have this?
It's a revenue sharing model with miners and transaction submitters.
But so it would need to be implemented into a...
Oh, no, no. It is
like it doesn't exist.
It does exist.
It is implemented.
Is it an L1?
No. This is a modified version of Geth. So it's an Ethereum full node software for miners.
Yeah, okay.
And
okay,
what it does is it accepts transactions without transaction fees, checks if the transaction will pay the miner, and then executes them if it does. There's a lot, you know, like more complexity there and a lot of interesting things you can do with it. But essentially, you know, what it's doing is it's checking transactions for MEV and optimizing based on MEV. And it's a normal Ethereum node that runs on the network today, and at least one pool is running.
And so, okay, so if a mining pool uses this node software, then it is actually already implemented.
Yeah.
But it's not a hard fork, and it's not through, it didn't have to do any of the Ethereum governance stuff.
Yeah, it's not a hard fork. It's not a change to Ethereum. It is a change to the software to recognize this extractable value and extract it.
Interesting.
And then do a revenue share between the submitter and the miner.
Cool.
But this has already existed in Bitcoin land forever. like transaction acceleration has sort of like, I mean, I don't mean to disabuse the kind of idealist notion that, oh, like miners, non-consensus part things, they have, of course they follow whatever Bitcoin Core does. Absolutely not, right? Like the mempool in transaction ordering is kind of the thing in general that like is never in consensus because too expensive to ever be in consensus. I just don't, until we have some crazy ZK world where I can ZK snapshot my mempool ordering as I get transactions or something, there's really no way that you're ever going to put that in. And
there's a really intuitive way to say that, which is the mempool is what you're going to come to consensus on. If you want to come to consensus on the mempool, you need a mempool to do that.
And it's turtles all the way down.
Ruh-roh. All right. I want to continue on with some of the topics that I wanted to cover in this. And this is there was basically three terms I threw out to you kind of in some notes in preparation for this. It was the highest potential. So that's like highest potential outcome this year in zero knowledge, blockchain, whatever in that category. Highest potential stretch dream, something that could happen, but it would be unlikely, but might be interesting or awesome. And then what black swan possibility do you think people might want to look out for? So let's start with highest potential. This could be kind of anything. Josh, do you have a highest potential idea?
What I think would be interesting to see as something that would be the most, like the highest value that we could all bring this year or see this year, is if actually like that some of those chains that are built with like, the multi-blockchain blockchains that allow a great deal of interoperability actually have some privacy-focused chains on them. And that it kind of, that the inclusion of that might accelerate more private versions of DeFi, maybe not in the way that we were talking about earlier. But, you know, a lot of that is like, it's incumbent on the, you know, those chains launching and being successful and getting enough usage and to be meaningful. I would love to see that. I don't know if it's going to happen. Craziest low probability event that could happen is just, you know, we follow the same cycle as the rainbow chart predicts and all assets rise in tandem and we wind up with a $10 trillion market cap for this funny money that we all have.
Should that be, is that your stretch dream?
Yeah, why not? Sure. I just want to see what all of people, there are a lot of, just to be blunt, there are a lot of terrible people in our industry, but there are a lot of like really wonderful people who I think would do amazing things with life-changing wealth, and I would love to see what they do.
Cool.
So that would be great.
Nice.
And then black swan
hold your black swan. I want to do everyone's highest potential stretch dream, and then
go
into the darkness.
I was doing them all serially. My bad.
No worries. No, I'm just changing course as we're going through it.
Yeah.
Tarun, what's your highest potential likely thing to happen, and a stretch dream?
The highest likelihood is the gentrification of Ethereum due to layer 2s.
All the normies move in?
No. As in like the protocols start clustering to different layer 2s. And you, in this fragmented ecosystem, it's like you have the DeFi layer 2 neighborhood, which is like the, you know, upper crust neighborhood. You have the like CryptoKitties NFT neighborhood, which is kind of like trying to be cool, but it's kind of like,
is it like LA?
You know, it's like Williamsburg. It once was cool, but it kind of just is filled with sycophants who don't realize they're. And then you have the like, you know, the remainder, which is, I don't know, just different neighborhoods.
Interesting.
So, I feel like the layer twos are basically turning a single chain into a city.
Okay. What's your stretch dream? This would be like crazy shit that could happen that would be kind of awesome.
Private DEX.
That you think of that as a stretch dream and not a possibility?
I think a lot of the people who are doing it are very smart, but I also think that you kind of need to have a little bit of the delusion that you've already solved the problem before you realize all the pitfalls.
Yeah. Whoa. Okay. James, throwing the ball to you.
You know, kind of in the same vein as Tarun, thing I'm excited about and think is likely to happen is a bit of this disaggregation of DeFi and all of the Ethereum layer one stuff. We had Compound announce their app chain. We're having these layer twos come online that won't be directly interoperable and composable the way layer one is.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to kind of completely change the way we think about dApps and DeFi and the way they all fit together to account for this. And I think it's going to be really fun and interesting. The stretch goal that I think won't happen in the time frame is a cheap, simple standard for connecting these layers. I think that we're going to have a bunch of bespoke bridges that don't work together with no standards around them for the foreseeable future. And we're going to have all of these bridges to Ethereum, which is an extremely inefficient, bad environment for running a bridge. And a huge amount of effort and resources is going to be spent bridging to Ethereum, unfortunately.
I'm excited for this to be called Project Tacoma Narrows.
Yep. Yeah, I think I'm predicting disaggregation, and what I would like to see is efficient connections between all of these different neighborhoods in the city. But I don't think it's likely that we build a good subway system anytime soon.
All right, let's now talk about black swans. Bom, bom, bom. I think the definition of a black swan is like you're not supposed to be able to predict it or something, right? It's the most unlikely bad thing.
It's something we all pretend is impossible.
So what do you have in mind as a black swan?
Nation state attack.
Ooh. On a chain?
Because I feel like everyone's kind of getting complacent now. They're like, oh yeah, PayPal is buying a ton of Bitcoin and GBTC is buying a ton of Bitcoin and like... Mm-hmm. I don't know. At some point, I feel like on the march to 10 trillion, I guess, is eventually, you know, surpassing the GDPs of Germany and France. So, you know, starts to seem a little bit like, I think there might be some likelihood for that. The other two things I think that are black swans, the end of the Moore's Law for zero knowledge proof stuff, if you think of it in terms of pure algorithmic or whether it's like in terms of the coding, like the actual implementations, kind of like if that peters out and we kind of are stuck with what we have. And the last thing is the ultra rug pull, which is like somehow DeFi collapses due to like insurance cascades, Oracle failure. And, you know, as much as I love how Chainlink has somehow vacuumed researchers like in a way that I'm kind of still
no
shocked
one could
at
have predicted
how many people no one predicted that like 2 years ago. If Chainlink somehow fails, there's a lot of blood in the streets, or a lot of blood in the layer two, whatever, you know. I don't know what's the equivalent of street blood in the blocks.
Blood in the chains. Blood in the mempool? I don't know.
Blood in the mempool already is being splattered. Okay. I mean, the mempool is like, you know, Fight Club.
James.
Ooh, black swan events. So Tarun brought up nation state attacks. You know, back when I started working on this, everyone was afraid of FinCEN. This was back in like 2013, 2014. We've gone through phases where everyone's afraid of the SEC and everyone's afraid of the CFTC, and now we're kind of back to FinCEN and the SEC. I think that, you know, a black swan could be a new administration with a aggressive regulation policy. I don't think that's very likely, but it would kind of knock the wind out of the sails for most of DeFi. What we saw like last cycle was this innovation in token sales. We saw a bunch of different models of token sales, of like direct on-chain smart contract sales, moving into these long-term auctions, moving into SAFTs and other off-chain instruments. We saw like a lot of experimentation around how do we sell these tokens directly to customers. What we're seeing this cycle is a lot of innovation around airdrops. Is how do we distribute these tokens without doing a sale?
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the other black swans I have in mind is that we kind of settle on this like standard for distribution that is retrospective and it causes a lot of problematic and unhealthy behavior that attracts attention or attracts regulators.
Interesting. Yeah, there's one new mechanism that I just recently learned about for that. I mean, I think it goes into this category, but it's like these work locks, like the lock drops. There's on the Kusama network, there's like, I think this changes names sometimes, but it's like the crowd loan because you have to secure parachain slots with a certain amount of KSM and participants could help you.
The progression from, you know, these work locks and lock drops and stake drops and through like the SNX rewards contracts and into the YFI rewards has really been like this fascinating amount of experimentation with how can we unfairly distribute tokens and call it a fair distribution. You know, and we've seen some amazing innovation on that out of the Merkle drops and the retrospective distributions. And I think we're going to keep seeing innovation until some sort of black swan happens.
Oi. All right, Josh, what's your black swan?
Well, I was actually going to approach it from the regulatory side as well. But the specific, just to get to drill down and maybe suggest another horrifying scenario involving privacy is that, let's say something, maybe not the current FinCEN rules, but other rules like it pass, and all of a sudden every single centralized exchange is required to basically document the second or even third order, and acquire those people's identity. The big maybe black swan there that I think could have tremendous negative impact is not so much that they're doing that data collection, but that the data collection itself, because let's get real, if it's done by banks and exchanges, what are the track records of banks and exchanges at securing this kind of data? It's not great. Mm-hmm. And I like can foresee if there's ever any kind of hack that doesn't actually result in people losing monetary value, but instead results in like a complete
data release
complete data release of all of these, and effectively fills in the gaps and makes it possible for anyone to be, you know, chain analysis for a minute. I don't know. I kind of worry like if that happens and then all of that becomes very, very public, I think that people there will be this illusion that people had about the privacy of these systems that just gets shattered, even though we all know that it works that way now.
To take the Leninist view on this, maybe you need that to actually have the revolution.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. that is totally fair. Actually, I mean that is the silver lining of that black swan is like, okay, well, all this is out. Why were we not building these systems with this in mind to begin with? I think that's the craziest. Oh, and the other one, of course, being like on the nation state side. What if there is some sweet quantum computer somewhere that someone's running and just decides to like spend all the early Bitcoin? What would that do? I kind of want to see that happen.
Even, you know, a non-nation state, just Satoshi showing up again with all this Bitcoin would be a pretty interesting black swan. Hasn't happened yet, though.
Whoa. Yeah, when I thought of black swans, it's interesting. Mine was much more focused on like the narrative crashing and crumbling and burning, which would be
perfectly predictable. You know, that's 100% going to happen.
It's going to happen anyway. Yeah. But it's the idea that like some, you know, like in a polarized place, some side gravitates so heavily to this technology that it becomes a virtuous thing to really try to stamp it out across the world. That like governments across the world agree that this is not only is it, you know, dangerous to the infrastructure, but it's run by dangerous people. And I know there's hints of that, obviously, but so far it's been, you know, it's a wide range of people who are part of it. There's a lot of different actors, kinds of, you know, politically it's very broad. But my concern, or this is like a black swan, is that it becomes too much associated with one of the sides or quadrants or what have you. I hope it continues to be something that people are open to, and not that it becomes sort of a close, like the world closes their mind to it.
Actually, I want to add one positive, more positive Black Swan, because I feel like we're all focusing on like the nation state one, but I think there's a lot of people who are in the next, this year in particular, but between this year and next year, who have been extremely oppressed by technological progress. People in like Xinjiang, especially, I would say COVID kind of actually made it significantly worse as far as we can tell, in terms of like the like internment camps, like can't use money freely. And I actually feel like those people will drive usage for real life usage. That's like a black swan, that like the response to kind of the AI technocracy repression of like certain people actually leads to like real payment usage.
That would be awesome to see.
I think we've reached the, I mean, we've actually covered a lot of ground, and we have some fantastic ideas to explore further in the coming episodes. And I do want to ask each of you just kind of a quick, like if you want to, I don't know if you have something to share, but what's next for you? Like you personally, what are you excited about? What are you going to do this quarter? Do you have any projects or anything you want to, you can also shill. I shilled in the last podcast episode, so I feel like now we can do that.
Now that Frederick's gone, anything goes.
Oh no!
No rules.
Yeah, the shackles are off. I'm going to be a crypto trading podcast. Just wait. YouTube. Yeah. All right. What is new? What's next for you? Which one of you wants to start?
Josh, he's the mystery man.
All right. What's next for you, Josh?
I guess it's just, I am taking it a little easier than I have in the past. And so I'm advising a few folks, here or there, but my main output is I speak for a lot of people where I'm sort of disappointed with the quality of troll, and the lack of highbrow satire in our industry. And so I really love doing that, as many of you who might follow the Twadcast on my Twitter account know. It's
and
really
anyone
fun
who
for me.
Who saw you present at ZCon 1.
Oh yeah.
With the black turtleneck,
full Apple gear. Yeah.
Just channeled Steve Jobs right there on stage. It was amazing.
It was great. Oh yeah, and I super shat on Libra. It felt great.
It was so funny. It was
sort of an easy target, but yeah, it was that was fun. That was fun, and I love doing that sort of stuff.
It was very good.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a great time. But I'm going to be doing more of that in a long form context, and I'm really, you know, my personal stretch goal, once I get that site out, is going to be like trying to become a little bit more like a Matt Levine of the cryptocurrency industry. So that's my little project. But yeah.
Will you have text? Like what media are you thinking?
So the media, it's just going to be like a real bare bones. I'm not even going to use JavaScript, honestly. It's just going to be like text, and an audio file of my voice reading the text. That's pretty much it. That's it. That's all. And it's, you know, an RSS feed, so you can plug it into your Substack if you
want.
What
year
is doing
it?
RSS readers now. I know. The future is in the past. We just have to go back. Return, everybody.
Can we get the Josh Cincinnati VR experience?
That's the future.
That's V2. I'm going to go from text and audio files into full VR. It's going to be a
full immersive VR text.
Full immersive. Yeah, absolutely. It's just going to be like Microsoft Word art, but you need a Valve Index to see it properly.
All right. Throw to you, Tarun. What's next for you?
Well, you know, working on building a product, also really just, you know, I think I have a bunch of papers to write, but I feel like I do miss conferences. So
I know.
Unfortunately, it has been less inspired lately.
I don't know if you've ever said anything about the product on the podcast. Do you want to say something about it?
Yeah, I mean, so we're building kind of like a prediction engine, risk engine for DeFi protocols that we're calling automated governance. So what it does is we read a bunch of on-chain data and market data, run simulations, you know, every few minutes, and then kind of make some prediction. And if some like something is going wrong in your protocol, we'll submit a proposal automatically that's like, hey, here's the statistical reasons, like this thing is out of whack, and here's the before and after, this is why we chose this parameter, and then people can vote on it.
So, and it would be like, would it provide the resolution to that issue as well, like the exact change needed?
Yeah, I mean, it would generate the code. Okay. Right, like it would generate like the Solidity code needed to do that. And then it would basically submit it. A lot of the changes aren't even actually deploying a new contract. A lot of them will be like, change the interest rate slope to 0.8 and look at the results for Y. It's kind of like people aren't really monitoring this stuff, but you know, if there's going to actually be this $10 trillion thing, then
stretch dream.
Someone needs to actually like pay attention to being the Fed black book or whatever. So
cool. Very cool.
All right, James, what's next for you?
You know, a lot of my time for the last few months has been spent prepping for the upcoming Celo hard fork. So that's going to be out in March, and then I'll have a lot more free time and a little less stress. I think what I'm looking to work on for the next 6 months or more is trying to build that, you know, cross-chain connection layer that I want to see in the world. We have some like interesting designs for this and a new approach, and I think like we can make something compelling and try to get people to use it. So I'm going to be spending a lot of time working on that at Celo.
Cool.
Very cool.
James, the ethical Robert Moses of the blockchain.
I want to take that like 1950s, 1960s New York City analogy to the fullest.
Yeah, you need to make a subway map of blockchains. Ooh. James. You know, it needs to have that iconic subway map like feel.
You know, I think the one of the nice things here is that I think I can maybe obsolete that pattern of these point-to-point connections and not need the subway map. I think that we have finally a good model for single producer, multi-consumer channels. So we could maybe like eliminate the need for that multi-hop subway transfer routing map.
Anna, what's next for you in 2021?
So I guess 2021, I actually spent some time over the last 2 weeks taking that week off, thinking about what this show can be like, what kind of ideas to pursue, what formats to look at. Going forward, I will be returning to a weekly. I think it's a really good routine for me. I will be inviting all three of you to be guest hosts on various episodes on various topics. There's also going to be a ZK podcast blog where it's hopefully I will actually write some of these, but we're also going to get really smart guest writers to start writing deeper deep dives on some of the topics that are covered in the show. Or have been covered. We might also look back to some older episodes where, you know, we did this really great podcast, but then never produced anything else with it. And it actually could use some extra reference material and all of that. So we're going to be playing around with that. I have Alex Pruden, who's helping me on the blog, and he's going to be, you know, working with coordinating new authors and all of that.
Oh, I love Alex.
Yeah. And the ZK Summit. Currently, I'm thinking of actually doing it one time per year and a bit later in the year, and hopefully when we can actually do it in person. But I also think there's something worthwhile in having us get together around these topics for sort of like more like in a meetup setting. And so actually, I'm planning on doing a monthly ZK Sessions event, quote unquote, an online event, kind of like a meetup, kind of like a mini summit. And I want to do that. I want to kind of try to link that a little bit closer together with some of the podcast topics. It's going to be a work in progress, like the blog. And so this will be sort of coming out regularly. The first few might be a little awkward because we don't know what they are yet. But yeah, that's the plan. And then that would lead up to a new ZK Summit. The ZK Summit has been awesome. And I did two online ones last time. But I like it, you know, the online doesn't quite get that feeling of the in-person. And it's sort of heartbreaking in a way because everyone's there and you want to chat with everyone in the way you would have normally done in a live event, but you can't. And so that's why I'm going to push that back a little bit. I also think that online events, like I did 2 days of 6 hours, which was like a lot. And I think a 3 hour once a month might be a little bit easier. We can all get together and stuff like that. So look out for those. I'm actually going to be releasing a blog post with like the whole spectrum of things that we're going to do around the podcast, but I'm pretty excited about it. I feel like this year, like I want to be a little bit more thoughtful in the programming and work a little bit more on having series, like, you know, episodes that really grow off the other ones, like our previous ones. So that's the current plan. I'm so excited that you all came on this first episode of the year with me. Really looking forward to, like co-hosting. And
yeah, likewise.
Digging into new topics with you.
No, I'm tremendously excited this year. Just for it being not just a new year and it not being 2020, but also for Zero Knowledge in particular, and Zero Knowledge, the podcast as well as the research space. But I'm excited to help where I can too. So thank you for hosting and having all of us on, Anna.
Cool.
Would be remiss without giving you at least one dumb math fact, which is 2021 has a nice quadratic structure as its prime factorized as 43 times 47.
Ooh. Very nice.
45 plus 2 times 45 minus 2. So if you've ever had to go to interviews where they ask you to multiply numbers, that one is a nice.
We'll never forget that, 2021.
Yeah. Beautiful.
I'm really excited to be, you know, part of the show more often this year. And I also have a math fact, which is that 7 is not divisible by 3. Wish it was.
All right. So thank you all again for joining for this first episode of the year. And to our listeners, thanks for listening.